Just over halfway through this year, and already 2019 is the worst year for measles in almost two decades. The disease was declared eliminated in the U.S. in 2000, but new outbreaks in Washington State and New York have had health officials scrambling. Massachusetts has now had at least two confirmed cases. All this week on Morning Edition, we're bringing you a special series on the history of vaccinations. It's called Infectious, and it's from the WBUR podcast Endless Thread. Today, in part one, we travel back to colonial Massachusetts for an early example of vaccine innovation that was followed by a backlash. Here are Endless Thread hosts Amory Sievertson and Ben Brock Johnson with the story.
It's the year 1721 in Boston, and things are not great. A smallpox outbreak arrives from the Caribbean via passengers on a ship called the HMS Seahorse. Over half the city is hit with the virus.
And when smallpox broke out, there was widespread panic.
Gareth Williams is a professor emeritus of medicine at the University of Bristol in the UK. And he wrote the book, The Angel of Death, The Story of Smallpox.
90% of its victims were kids under the age of five, so it had a great reputation as being the slayer of innocents. And if you got it and you lived, you weren't necessarily that lucky, because about a third of the survivors were badly scarred. And they could be hideously disfigured.
Enter Puritan minister Cotton Mather, known for his involvement in the Salem witch trials, but also for fighting smallpox in Boston. In Mather's world, this is just like a regularly occurring horrible thing that happens every few years. And in his particular group of Puritan Christians, everyone believes it's just God's will.
There used to be a time when we got infectious diseases, and there was nothing we could do other than just kind of live through them or die.
Renee Nahara is an epidemiologist and the editor of The History of Vaccines, a website studying the global history of vaccination.
Renee says Mather was spending a lot of time around an enslaved person who knew something Mather didn't.
He owned a slave from Africa whose name I always slaughter to. It's Onesimus, O-N-E-S-I-M-U-S.
This wasn't his real name, by the way. It's just a biblical name that Mather called him. It means useful.
And the slave had a mark on his arm. And Mr. Mather said, you know, what is that mark? And Onesimus said, they gave us a smallpox so we wouldn't get the smallpox. And that was very interesting to him. He's like, what are you talking about?
Mather says, I gotta look into this. So he sends out letters all over the world to all of his fellow scholars. He's like, is this a thing? And they say, yep.
The letters come back and people in Turkey say, oh yeah, I've heard about this. The Arabs do it all the time. They take a lancet and they lance the pus out of somebody with smallpox and they insert that lancet into somebody's arm or somebody's hand. And then those people, if they get a fever, they do get a little bit sick. But if they don't, if they don't die from full-blown smallpox, they become immune.
It's a pretty wild idea, and as it turns out, an ancient one, discovered and practiced in a lot of different cultures, possibly dating back as far as 2,000 years ago in ancient China. Taking smallpox scabs or pus and introducing the virus to the body to protect people from getting the full-blown disease.
So Mather takes all of this information and he's like, all right, let's do this. Let's start getting rid of smallpox in Boston with variolation, the predecessor to vaccination. Mather finds one physician, Zabdiel Boylston, who is willing to try this risky experiment.
Not a lot of volunteers come in right out of the gate. So Boylston and Mather do this to enslaved people who hadn't already been variolated back in Africa, and also their own children, some of whom are toddlers. Which is a pretty awful way of going about conducting your experiments.
Pretty soon, though, a more direct challenge pops up for Boylston and Mather's operation. The people they are enslaving and their own kids don't have a choice. But the other Puritans in Mather's community, even in his own congregation, are like, wait a minute, your slave told you about this?
Also, this smallpox outbreak is God's will. You know that. And you want to do what with smallpox pustules?
Religious authorities got in on it as well, for the same reasons of maintaining body purity, that the body was pure the way it was designed, and why should we mess with something that's natural?
So take blatant racism, add in some squeamishness around pus, stir in some puritanical beliefs. What do you get? You get the Society of Physicians Anti-Inoculators, America's first anti-vaccine, or to be more correct, anti-inoculation group.
Led by the only person in the city of Boston who is technically an MD at the time.
William Douglas was the doctor's name. This group meets in coffee shops around the city. They become very vocal.
Eventually, you get a bomb thrown into Mather's house, which lands in a room where his nephew is recovering from inoculation. Mather had some things to say about the reaction to his efforts. He's like, "Dear diary,
people who made the loudest cry had a very satanic fury acting them. Their common way was to rail and to rave, and to wish death or other mischiefs to them that practiced or favored this devilish invention."
The firebomb thrown into Mather's house malfunctioned. It never exploded. And despite the best efforts of the Society of Physicians Anti-Inoculators, Mather and Boylston's experiment becomes the first ever numbers-supported clinical trial in Western medical history, which is standard procedure now.
They're tallying up the people they save, the people they unintentionally kill, and the other people in the city who get smallpox and live or die. And then finally, Mather decides to send all of this information to the big boss.
He sends it off to the Queen of England, saying, "Here's a report from your colonies, Your Majesty. This is what we did. And look, like, not a lot of people got smallpox, actually, you know, who were inoculated, variolated." And the British government then says, "All right, everybody, all the colonies, now everybody's going to get this variolation."
A mandatory policy from the crown to the colonies. This doesn't go over great in pre-Revolutionary War Boston.
Who'd have thunk it? And while Renee says there are other examples of resistance to variolation, this is kind of a crucial plot point in the story of vaccination. Because in some ways, you see the roots of two familiar ideas.
Well, number one, the government is not going to tell me what to do with my own body. And number two, you know, discrediting the science and saying, no, there's no evidence for this. You know, he got the idea from a slave. What do they know? He got the idea from the Arabs in Turkey. What do they know?
Skepticism of government and expertise, xenophobia, racism, all still big issues in America 300 years later. And two ideas, freedom to choose and questions about the validity of the science of vaccines, are still present and powerful in today's debates about vaccination.